Hey, what's up, guys? It's Jerry. Welcome to the Corner Booth Podcast. Big show today. We are talking championship weekend from the NFL, as well as the reaction from McGregor's loss in UFC 257 this week, plus news from the Lions, Texans, some Alabama stuff. Stay tuned. And, of course, the one-year anniversary of Kobe Bryant, so we will be also honoring number 24 and number 8 as well. So stay tuned. It's going to be a great episode. You are now in the Corner Booth Podcast, a sports podcast from Belly Up Sports and the Belly Up Podcast Network. Here is your host, Jared Clinton. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Corner Booth Podcast. I am your host, Jared Clem, alongside my sidekick. No, not sidekick. He's too high for that at this point. My right-hand man, Mr. Kev. Our intern, Samir. Pat is on a getaway this week, so he'll be back for a live stream. Little vacation from a man. So here we go. Great show. Great weekend in sports, by the way. By the way, if you haven't followed us on Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook, first of all, you're offending my poor intern's heart. He's killing it right now on there, and so is Kevin, and so am I. At Corner Booth on Corner Booth Pod on Twitter, at Corner Booth Pod on Instagram, and Corner Booth on our Facebook page. We also have a TikTok and YouTube, which are going to get more active during the offseason, so look out for that as well. We want to welcome you in. Guys, how are you feeling today?
I'm great. I want a nap.
You look exhausted. I was noticing that before. I'm like, I've been running off of like just straight energy since this morning. But like, I mean, maybe that's just me. I'm not sure. I had to sit through 2.5 hours of Zoom meetings before, so that was a real treat. But shout out to my boys over at Lions on the Prowl for sitting down with me for the last 2 hours and doing over some strategic stuff. Samir, how are you feeling today, Bill?
I'm good. It's snowing over here. I like the snow.
It's snowing over here too, bro. Nice. We got about 2 inches over here.
Just started over here, I think. I had class today.
Do you have to walk? Is it all remote, or are you actually going in?
Today was all remote. They kind of pick and choose. So tomorrow, both my classes are in person, and then because it's like you kind of get to choose which ones. And for like the bigger lectures, I was like, I'd rather just be home. I mean, I don't want to go all for like a big lecture anyway, so I'll just stay home on my computer.
I hate lecture halls. Those are the worst.
Yeah.
Because I'd honestly be on my phone by about the 20-minute mark.
But I could be on my phone.
Yeah, I like the in-person classes. I am very curious. I love learning things. So like, if it is honestly an interesting topic, like history, like if I had a professor towards the end of my senior year who I just didn't give a shit about like learning anymore. So, and he was a great, nice guy. It's just like I just wasn't really that interested. I just took the classes to graduate. So I'd sit in the back room with a couple of my friends, and me and her and this other kid would just chill in the back and just goof around and like playing our phones and shit and just talking bullshit. So it ended up turning out like I would just like BS my way through papers, get like straight B's. And at the end, he looks at me and this guy was like, oh, you're a graduating senior. I've talked to you twice the entire semester. I'm like, yeah. And he goes, oh, well, you don't take the final. You're good. Graduate. I'm like, but like I also had like giant bio classes where basically I passed by the skin of my teeth because this lady barely spoke English. And then she would yell at us if we were on our phones. But I'm like, I am 110 rows up, and she's still screaming at us. She's yelling at us. And it was hysterical. But, honestly, college is weird. So, Samir, are you, like, on campus, or you have to, like, in an apartment, you have to walk a little bit?
I'm on campus, but my room is, like, a little bit of a walk. Like, to get all my meals, it's like a 10-15 minute walk. So like I'll have to go to the dining hall, get all my food, like take all of it, like, and put it in a bag. They put them in these little like Tupperware things and then walk it back. It's so weird.
That's gotta be, I never thought about that the whole thing with COVID. Yeah, that makes sense. So it's so funny, like my senior year and junior year, I had a kitchen. So I just cooked most of the time. I would go to like dining hall maybe occasionally, but maybe for lunch. But like, cause I was always on campus at that point. But like, it was crazy to me because like, I lived like 20 minutes. It was a 20-minute walk because my campus was about maybe a square mile wide. Everything was right there. There was only one campus that was downtown. That was for grad school, but that was about it. So, all right, we've talked enough about.
I didn't have a meal plan my sophomore, junior, or senior year.
Wow, that's honestly a flex. That's like you really on top of it. Yeah. I'm looking for an apartment now. Shout out to my realtor, Alfred.
Attaboy. Plug his realty on. All right. I mean, okay. So the biggest thing right now, guys, is that we had probably one of the most fun. The only thing we made this weekend in football in sports bar was we had a little college ball. But season's over, so nobody's complaining. But Saturday, we had UFC 257. We'll get to that in a minute. But we had I'd say one and a half entertaining games because I felt so bad for Buffalo towards the end of that game. I'm like, they just looked overmatched after they scored the 9 points. I'm like, oh my God, they're going to do it. And I'm like, no, they're not. Oh, poor Buffalo. But we'll start with Green Bay, Tampa Bay. Battle 12 versus 12. And honestly, one of the funnest games I've watched in recent memory, especially in the playoffs. Like, I was on my edge of my seat for the entire game. Up until that clearly called penalty on Kevin King at the end of the game. So we'll get right off with it. Boys, initial reactions from Tampa Bay and Green Bay. Kev, you want to go first?
Yeah, Tom Brady's the GOAT.
Yeah.
Like, even people are still denying it. They're saying it's Drew Brees because he has all the records. They're saying it's Aaron Rodgers just because he's physically gifted. Max Kellerman is admitting that Tom Brady's the GOAT. He passed Joe Montana. He says that he made the cliff prediction 5 years ago, and Tom Brady's fit a whole Hall of Fame career in that time span. And look, yeah, he threw three picks. One of those was off Mike Evans' hands. Another one was he was mid getting hit and threw it off to Mike Evans, and Mike Evans just didn't turn around. Yeah, it was still probably going to be a pick either way, at the very least an incompletion. But Mike Evans, I tweeted this, Mike Evans is the worst big game receiver Tom Brady has had since Wes Welker.
Yeah.
Oh my God, I forgot about those shots.
It's so crazy because he played great in the divisional rounds.
It's expected though because he went to Texas A&M and they don't play in big games.
I guess so.
Like, I'm waiting for Chris Pinto to come out of nowhere and just photobomb the Skype session. I'm
waiting for Chris Pinto. Johnny Manziel, 2014 against Alabama. Nah.
So when we go on Belly Up Fantasy Live, Kevin, Chris are just gonna yell at each other about SEC football for about 20 minutes. My biggest takeaway from this was, one, Mike Evans had a good game against – he was, like, the best player – one of the best offensive players in the field against New Orleans, or at least he played well enough.
Yeah.
My favorite was how Chris Godwin, after one of the worst drops I'd ever seen – it hit him square in the hands on a crossing route – comes back with one of the best bobbled catches I've ever seen in my life and is just, like, there for Tom Brady when he needed him. And – or my favorite – was when I said, I made a comment about how my mom said Gronk looks slow, and then Gronk catches that screen pass and takes it 27 down the sideline. And me and my boys are losing out of my friend's apartment. We're going nuts. I thought the people in the neighbors would get pissed at us. We were screaming and yelling because, of course, we were rooting for Tampa. But, like, that was crazy to me. And I we'll talk more about this, but Samir, initial takeaways from this game.
Man. Oh, man. Kevin King, bad game, man. I'm sorry. I hate to say it, but he really just he made multiple mistakes. And, yeah, you went back to that pass interference call. When I first saw it, I was like, I got a little mad. I was saying that I started to love Brady, but then during this game, I started to hate him again. Just the feeling of like, he's going to win again, isn't he? And I started just getting a little bit resentful. So then when that call happened, I was kind of like, the NFL's rigged. And then I saw that angle where he's just grabbing his shirt, and I was like, I mean, yeah, this is an easy call, actually. I have no issue with it.
It's the way they grabbed it that was the problem. And you show the angle, and Kevin, I think you said this in one of our group chats with our friends. It was just like, it looked clear. There was no way to, like, you couldn't ignore it. And especially, I said it, at the end of the game, you really can't, like, let that go because they don't really want it. I know it's, like, it's not the same severity, but you don't want another New Orleans versus Rams on your hands. It's not the same, but it's, if you let that go, then it's like, oh, the NFL's even more rigged because the Packers made the Super Bowl against the Chiefs.
Yeah. So they would want that to happen. Little repeat. But I don't know. Then there was also that. Sorry, there was also that other like argument people were having on the internet that they were like, "Oh well, I mean, yeah, it is a pass interference, but you can't make the call after quote unquote letting them play all game because they only had like three penalties before that." And that argument's kind of dumb too because it's like it is a crucial third down. Like it was a crucial play, so you're kind of just gonna be like, or you're kind of gonna look for more penalties than you usually would. And I don't know, that narrative didn't make sense to me. I don't know what you guys think about that.
Yeah, I thought also, like, the Sean Murphy bunting holds earlier, those were, he was still in stride with the guy. Yes, it is technically holding and pass interference, but he was in stride with the guy. Kevin King was beat bad, and he was doing everything he could to stop, I think it was Johnson, from getting a catch. And also I saw people online, that's not a catchable ball. Yeah, it's not a catchable ball, because Kevin King's holding on to his jersey and pulling him back. That is very catchable if he is allowed to go up and get it.
The whole catchable ball thing, because I want to actually see what the – I know it varies from college to pro, but, like, I've seen calls in college where guys are, like, 20 yards away from the ball and get shoved to the ground, and they're like, oh, I was a catchable ball, pass interference. I'm like, huh? But at the same time, you look at that the play you're talking about – there's still a jump ability for it. I mean, I don't know. It's, I come back to the same principle that when you look at it, it's moments in the game. Yes, the Sean Murphy bunting holds weren't great, but they were forgettable and they were letting him play. Yes, but in a crucial moment when the play is altered because of holding, in the whole game, the whole season for two teams lies in the balance. You have to make a call. That's what I'll say about that call. Also, Kevin King had maybe the worst two moments of that game. Dude got smoked by Scotty Miller.
Before that,
that was sick, though. That was awesome. On that
drive, when the Packers saw the ball, and it was like second down, and Tampa Bay called timeout. I was like, why the hell are they calling a timeout? There's 30 seconds left. You're just giving Green Bay more time. My dad's like, they just want the ball back. They're going to try and score again. I'm like, I don't think so. I think if they pick up this first down and get in field goal range, you're going to regret this. Then, lo and behold, they force turnover. They get the ball back. And Scotty Miller burns Kevin King. And my dad's looking at me like, yeah, idiot.
Shout out to Big Steve. Yeah, no, that Scotty Miller catch was crazy. Because I just saw Brady launch it. I'm like, okay, who's he? It's either is Mike or Godwin or Johnson, like, who's gonna catch this ball? And then I just see, like, this little white boy flying down the field, like, oh, he's gonna come down with it. And he had Kevin King smoked by like five steps. I was like, oh my lord, that kid is not gonna hear the end of it. And you know what's really bad is, like, everyone talks about Jerry Alexander. He is, like, you know, he's their number one corner. He is their lockdown guy, and he had a decent game. Two picks. One of them was like a BS tip. He got cooked on his route. The ball was off Mike Evans' hands, and he caught it, which is the most opportunistic interception I've ever seen, but it works. But, like, Jerry Alexander, to me, like, it was – can we also just talk – like, I lost it on that Leonard Fournette run. I love when running backs break a bunch of tackles and just refuse to go down. Like, I literally jumped out of my skin on that one because I'm a big Leonard Fournette fan. So, like, I wanted to see him, like, do well. And that run was just so much fun to watch. Just spinning, was jumping, awesome. Juking, trucking. I'm like, this is great.
He looked like Jacksonville Leonard Fournette, and I thought he was done. I honestly, like, when he was traded from Jacksonville, I was like, I don't know. I think maybe he just kind of is going to dwindle out and be a bust. But lo and behold, man, he's looking pretty freaking good. I honestly think, like, if you're a team looking at these playoffs, like, that's a starting running back. Like, 100% of the starting running back.
He's getting.
I don't know who needs it. Like,
he's gonna be a good. Somebody's gonna pick him up in free agency. Like, he's gonna get a big contract. I mean, I think running backs weird with contracts, but he's still young. He's got so much tread in the tires. So, I mean, Kev, like, he what got, like, the reason he looks so fresh? He got, like, what, less than 100 snaps, you said, this year?
Yeah, this season he doesn't have a lot of wear on the tires, but the years past he kind of has, and at LSU he did.
Yeah, so I think he's perfect in a two-back system. Like, if you're like a team like, let's say, the Chargers, who have a good – yes.
Wow, so here's good suggestion.
Yes, here's the thing.
The we AB talk, punch.
Yeah, here's the thing. So think about it. They already have Austin Eckler, right? who's a great change of pace guy. He's shifty. He's quick. Great out of the backfield. Leonard Fournette is okay catching the ball out of the backfield. His best strength is the fact you can hand him the ball, and he's going to muscle his way for at least 5 yards. Or if you leave him a seam, he might score because he's got enough burst to do it. I think he's perfect for that offense because the Chargers already have good weapons on the outside. Their biggest weakness last year was they could not run the ball to keep themselves in games. When they got Eckler back, their offense flipped around. They won 4 straight. So I think the biggest thing for them is maybe go get a Leonard Fournette when the season's over, because that man just played himself into getting a contract to at least be a change of pace back, or at least a primary back with a receiver. I don't know. I think Fournette played great there.
I still think he's the worst fourth overall pick of recent memory.
Oh, no, he was. He should have been drafted in the 20s. I hate drafting running backs ahead of, unless it's Adrian Peterson, like generational talent with no red flags. The stuff about his kid, that happened afterward. But like, if it's like a generational talent, like an Adrian Peterson or like an Eric Dickerson, yes, let's say my Eagles are on the clock in a couple years, Miles Sanders is gone, and you got a running back sitting there. Let's say it's some kid, you know, 5-star back, played 3 great years at Alabama, right? Say this dude's like a perfect like running back, right? He's sitting there like 15? No. 25? Perfect thing. I'll take a running back at like 18 plus. Because at that point, I want somebody who's like with the running backs, because it's weird. Kevin hit this on the head. This is where I will agree with Kevin a little bit. Trying to pay a running back is playing Russian roulette. Is he going to stay for 7 to 8 to 9 years where he's worth it? Or is he going to get hurt like Arian Foster and be gone in a year? I don't know. So
I have not said that paying a running back is like Russian roulette.
I said that, but I say you're not a big fan of playing running backs.
I think I'll agree with your analysis. It's like playing Russian roulette where every chamber has a round in it.
That wasn't my point.
Don't draft them top 5. Don't pay them ridiculous amount of money. It's not going to work out. Draft someone in the 4th round. You're fine. Once his rookie deal's up, draft someone else in the 4th round. He'll be fine.
Yeah, I'll agree to disagree on that one.
Well, how about these, like, the guys who've recently signed contracts? Like, do you guys think that they're so good that they, like, the McCaffreys, the Dalvin Cooks, the Alvin Kamaras, do you think, or the Zekes as well, do you think those guys are talented enough to earn those contracts and, stay on the team for that long?
No. Right, so I think it's all by individual case. McCaffrey, yes, because he's basically their entire offense until they fix their quarterback position. Dalvin Cook, yes, he's basically their offense with Justin Jefferson. Zeke, no, because he's proven he's not worth his contract. And who was the last one you mentioned? Kamara? Obviously, Kamara. Kamara is like literally the most dangerous weapon on offense. Can't guard Mike. Eric can guard him, so there's not really an issue about that. Like the Saints' offense is a whole different animal with Kamara in. You can ask our boy Cruz; he'll agree. Mike Tomlin, the slant king himself, was shut down against Tampa, but this man was not. So I'm telling you, Kamara's the most dangerous man on the field.
You said Kamara and McCaffrey. Like, let's say I'm not knock on wood, not saying I hope that happens. Let's say they blow out their knee; they can't handle the ball 20 times a game. Move them to slot receiver; they can catch fine. But look at the top 10 paid running backs from last year. Todd Gurley is number 10. Austin Eckler is 9. He missed a chunk of the year. Saquon Barkley is 8. He missed the entire year. Melvin Gordon is 7. He's a 2-back guy. Kenyon Drake is 6th. Derrick Henry's 5. David Johnson is 4.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. That's Le'Veon the Cardinals.
Bell at 3. Mm-hmm. Zeke at 2 and Christian McCaffrey at 1.
Okay, so I will offer this. All those contracts were offered by mostly bad teams. The Rams made the mistake of offering it to Gurley a year early. Most teams will wait until the year of the contract being up. Like, so let's say like it's like they're in their last year of the contract, then they'll offer the extension. If the Rams did that, that was the year after Gurley had all the injuries. They wouldn't have been in this hole. David Johnson, the Cardinals are just idiots. The Cardinals organization has been terrible for like a hot minute. And what was the Le'Veon Bell?
The Jets.
The Jets are the Jets, yeah.
So what you're telling me is only dumb organizations pay a lot of money for a running back. Thank you for proving my point.
Yeah. Wow. Good organizations pay running backs. I didn't say the Panthers are a decent organization. They've just had some bad luck. Because the McCaffrey, it makes sense, obviously. And a lot of these contracts were from, like, the mid. I think running backs are also making a comeback. You're seeing it more and more. The running game is very needed, especially in a very pass-heavy league where teams are getting these ridiculous free cornerbacks. I think the running game is still relevant, and it's more than it was 4 or 5 years ago. One of the biggest things to me is that a lot of these contracts are from, Kev, the 2014 to 2017 window. A lot of these contracts were all signed in that realm. And it cracks me up because those were all the worst. It's so funny. I knew about 7 or 8 of those guys Kevin was about to name off. And I'm like, yep. And I knew the exact reason why they paid them, and they were idiots for doing it. Saquon, I don't know. The jury's not out. He's only missed, besides this season, a total of 3 games. And I've gotten burned at that point before. I will say this about Saquon. He has a bounce back and has a good year next year. Then his contract looks fine to me. He just took a bad cut and it was all over. So there we go. All right. Green Bay Packers. Right. Aaron Rodgers. Press conference, really ominous. You got Jordan Love, they drafted in the first round this year. Honestly, right now, they were getting, like, they made my boy Sean Murphy Bunting look like a number 2 corner, number 1 corner, whatever. I don't know. Going for the field goal when they were within shot distance to win the game. Green Bay, I don't know. Kev, you want to take a shot at this one?
Yeah, I thought it was hysterical that Green Bay's GM said, "We're not idiots. Aaron Rodgers coming back after drafting Jordan Love in the first round." That was great. I think Aaron Rodgers will be back. He is under contract for a while. I don't think they're going to trade him because I don't think they'll get what they want on the open market. Because they're going to want 4 first-round picks this year. Aaron Rodgers is still one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL. He's better than Deshaun Watson. They're going to ask for more.
Even if it's a 2-year rental, basically, before he retires.
Yeah, and I think he's going to finish his career somewhere else. He's going to pull a Brett Favre. But Packers fans who are crying, like, oh, he's going, he's gone. Okay, great. Like, oh, you never think you get a Brett Favre, and then you get an Aaron Rodgers, too. Like, shut the fuck up. They each won you 1 Super Bowl. They're not that great. Brett Favre's interception to touchdown ratio is atrocious for a modern quarterback.
It's terrible. No, I will say also, the problem with Favre and Rodgers is Packers management up until about last year was awful free agency. And their drafting wasn't great either. The only good free agent they ever really got was, like, in history, was like Charles. The big names were like Charles Woodson and Reggie White. That's it. Ironically, they're 2 Super Bowl teams. But it's almost like when they hit it on a Super Bowl thing, then they actually tag it. I'm like, oh, so, you know, maybe you go sign a free agent for your defense or a wide receiver. I don't know. But, yeah, Packers fans are hysterical to me. One of our favorite Packers fans, she came on Twitter today and she was like, I don't really want to be on Twitter right now. I'm like, I wanted to respond. I'm like, I don't blame you. Relax. Enjoy yourself. Take some morning. It's fine. I feel bad for Packers fans, but at the same time, I don't. I feel bad for the only person I really feel bad for is Aaron Rodgers. That's it. Because they locked up his number 1 weapon. His number 2 and 3, 4, 5 weapons looked a little irrelevant. That one deep ball that they burnt Carlton Davis on, 5 out of 10 times that ball is getting swatted down or picked because that ball was just perfect placement. The play calling at the end was atrocious, and Matt LaFleur showed his inexperience. Yeah, I feel bad for Rodgers because he played his heart out this season. That he had an MVP year. And once again, Kevin, the MVP will not win the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
That's my favorite thing about the NFL every year. If you're winning MVP, if your quarterback wins MVP, y'all aren't winning the Super Bowl, and I love it.
I would love to see like a receiver at the Super Bowl 1 year. MVP 1 year, that'd be great. Just completely throw a monkey wrench into it. There's been a couple of defensive players who won MVP, right? Like, I know LT did once, right?
I believe so.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. I always love seeing defensive players get nominated for the Heisman, too. It's always my favorite.
Yeah, I mean, I think defense players getting voted for the Heisman, it's just like the token. Like, see, it's not just a quarterback slash offensive player award.
I mean, the cool, like, the Honey Badger with LSU was cool because he just did everything for them. Jabril Peppers was kind of fun, too, because he was, like, Michigan's Swiss Army Knife. And Dominican Sue, just because he was a freak of nature, defensive tackle. Like, nobody had seen anything like it since, like, the old days of, like, defensive tackles. But I just,
There's only been two guys. It's just, LT and, in 1971, Alan Page.
Wow.
Literally, the rest are quarterbacks and running backs.
There are no receivers?
Nope, one place kicker.
Wait, yeah, in the lockout shortened season.
Ah. Yeah.
Or no, not the lockout shortened, the replacement player season.
Ah, okay.
Actually, hold on, I'm wrong. There was, in 1958, a defensive end, and 1960, a linebacker.
Why?
Gino Marchetti and Joe Schmidt.
Joe Schmidt sounds like such a linebacker name.
Yeah. He just has the biggest neck pad you've ever seen.
Right? Or like the big butterfly, like the cowboy collar. Yeah.
Lawrence Taylor won it.
Yeah. Who was the last running back to win it, Samir?
Adrian Peterson.
Oh yeah, it's been a while. That was a great season.
Yeah.
Wow, we had back to back running backs in 2005 and 2006.
It was LT and Alexander, right?
Yeah, and then 1997 was a weird year.
Why was there two? Wait, what happened?
If Brett Favre has 2.5 MVPs because apparently there was a tie with Barry Sanders.
The NFC North back in the 90s must have been wild. You had three teams with, like, you had the Lions with Barry Sanders, you had the Packers with Super Bowl years with Favre, and then you had the emerging Vikings that just had, like, the early Moss, Chris Carter, Randall Cunningham years. The NFC North in the late 90s must have been wild. Like, those games must have been insane. All right. Y'all ready to talk the AFC game?
Yeah.
All right, let's do it. All right, KC Buffalo. This is the first championship game I've shut off early in like 8 years. It wasn't out of the lack of professionalism. It was literally because I knew who was going to win the damn game after Tyreek Hill or whoever scored like that last touchdown. I think it was Kelsey. They were up by like 5th. They were up by like 14 or 21 or something like that. I was just like, you know what? I'm done. Yeah. I'm done. I feel awful. They can't, the Bills can't move the ball. McDermott looks overwhelmed calling plays, and their offensive coordinator just – the offensive play calling for the Bills, I get it. T.J. Yeldon's more of a receiving back, and so is Devin Singletary. But for the love of God, the Chiefs could not stop you guys running the ball to the edge. Every time the Bills got the ball to the edge running the ball, it was at least 7 or 8 yards. And I watched most of the game, so probably about 75%, maybe a little more. I watched in the fourth quarter a little bit. The play calling just bewildered me. The Bills looked overwhelmed. They looked like they were like just happy to be there. Josh Allen's running for his damn life. The moment to me it stuck out though was Stephon Diggs after the game standing on the sideline watching the Chiefs celebration. That is one motivated dude. Like, Diggs might have 2,000 yards receiving next year. Just like, damn. Like, that man's hungry. I think Buffalo will be back next year, and they're going to be a force. I just think they've got to get a running back. Maybe a Leonard Fournette.
Oh.
Because I think the biggest problem with them was they just – like, I'm sorry, Zach Moss and Devin Singletary, it's not a good running game. The Buffalo Bills' problem was they were unbalanced. But Chiefs look like the team they were last year.
I mean,
explosive as hell.
Singletary, Moss, and Josh Allen make a decent running game. The problem was Zach Moss was hurt.
Also true.
Or go get Aaron Jones.
Aaron Jones fits perfectly in that system, too, because he can catch the ball in the backfield.
Yeah.
Dude, intern. If that comes true, man, I think the Bills owe you some cash.
Yeah. Come on. I'm going to make this happen in Madden. I think see how it works.
Jeez. I mean, I put DK Metcalf and the Eagles twice, and it works perfectly with Wentz's arm strength. So there you go.
It was possible, too.
Shout out, Howie. Three times you passed on him. All right. Enough Eagles talk. But KC, guys, holy mother of God, that offense is incredible. My God. Like, it, you know, I love watching games with my parents or my friends who are not as football savvy as me, who don't, like, watch film and don't watch enough hours of football. Because when I'm talking with you guys, it's more like common practice. Excuse me for burping. But the biggest thing to me was they were like, number 10 is so fast. I'm like, yeah. He's the fastest player in the league by a country mile, and it's not even close. This man can catch the ball on a slant and house it 75 yards, get tackled. But shout out to Jordan Poyer, like, for almost sweeping his ankles on that play, man. But holy crap. Just between him, Hartman, Pringle, Kelsey, Edwards-Helaire, dude.
Daryl Williams this weekend.
Tom Brady's gonna have to pray to whatever God he prays to, whatever deal he made with the guy down below. I don't know. I don't care for this to be a game. I don't know. This also could have been Buffalo just was so unprepared. Buffalo almost looked lost that entire game.
I don't think it was that really. I doubt it. I think Sean McDermott knew what to do and what they could do, but the Chiefs are just one of those teams. You can't really stop them. Yeah. You drop guys deep to watch for the deep ball to Tyreek Hill, Mecole Hardman. Travis Kelce's going to eat you up underneath. You go underneath to stop Travis Kelce. You have Tyreek Hill and Mecole Hardman deep in single coverage.
Yeah.
There's nothing you can really do.
They have like five different receivers they can throw to that are dangerous. It's crazy. It's, you know what's crazy about the Chiefs is that it wasn't even their offense that impressed me the most. Their defense was smothering Buffalo. I was like, my buddy texts me and goes, is their defense really been that good all year and we just haven't seen it? I'm like, their defense has a lot of studs on it. They just, like, they're quiet. You don't really, because they don't get the headlines. But you look back, they have Chris Jones, they have Frank Clark, they have the Honey Badger, they have Breshad Breeland, they have Ward, they have, like, decent guys. It's not like it's a scrub lineup of players. And Mr. Cheap Shot himself, Anthony Sorensen. To me, it's bewildering. I'm just, whew. Yeah, the Chiefs, honestly, once they got past the Browns, I think, was that oh my God, we almost got upset game. The poor Bills had stood no chance. It was like they got their mojo back at the end of the game against – they got scared a little bit, like, against the Browns. And I feel like a numbskull saying that, oh, yeah, I'll admit I was wrong. Like, I thought the Chiefs were going to, like, come out slow because Buffalo's defense is usually playing fast. But Buffalo's defense just looked overwhelmed. They just looked like they it was not like during the year when they played them back in, like, October, I think. And they had an answer for everything. They just got beat out in the end. It was a great game to watch. It just felt like they just were outgunned the entire time. There was, like, no hope. The hope got once Hardman ran that ball in, I'm like, uh-oh, it's over. Here comes the tidal wave of red.
Yeah. And you know what? Something about Patrick Mahomes that I'll say, I don't even know if I've had thought this way with any player, like, I love all the weapons there right now, but I'm just excited for the future just to see whoever they draft, he's just going to make good. Like, you think after Travis Kelce retires, they're not going to give him another tight end, and he's not going to make him an absolute stud? Like, well, I'm just so excited to see just the guy is so good.
Well, also, Travis Kelce also was a good tight end when Alex Smith was there.
He was, yeah.
Yeah, so it's like Kelce was a dominant player in 17 and 16. The guy's been a good player since he got into the damn league. I don't think he was dominant in 16, but in 17, he was arguably one of the better tight ends in the league already. And the second Mahomes got there was a wrap. So, my biggest thing right now, before we go to closing thoughts on this game, is just that Super Bowl's going to be insane.
Yeah.
That first game was great. AB's going to be back. It's a good chance he's going to play.
Rojo's going to be a little more healthy.
Leonard Fournette will be full speed still. Mike Evans, I think, after Tom Brady gives him an exorcist or exorcism, I don't even know, to figure out the hell's wrong with his hands. Godwin, who seemed to caught a hot streak. Scotty Miller, the White Reaper. Yeah. I think that's what we got to call him from that one, the White Reaper. That dude is just a nightmare for teams. Also, runs the cleanest stop and go I've ever seen, by the way. Just watch him run a stop and go. I think you can watch on YouTube, like Scotty Miller stop and go or something. It's just, it's not, it's like his hips move, but he keeps running full speed forward. It's not right, but it's clean. Leave it to Brady to make another undersized wide receiver a superstar. Kev, final thoughts on playoffs before we roll into Super Bowl week next week.
I hope the Bills don't panic in the offseason. I hope they don't go out there and make crazy moves, trade away Tre'Davious White to get some offensive firepower. No, just draft a running back, kind of keep building up your receiving core, do it that way, and then, you know, try to take a shot next year. I mean, you're still a good young team.
Bills have the first round pick still, right, I believe? I don't think they traded it. Maybe go get a certain Alabama running back who runs really hard, is had a dominant national title performance. It would fit their system perfectly.
The problem with that is he might be gone by the time they're picking.
Or go get a certain Clemson running back who doesn't need to catch the ball out of the backfield. You have Singletary for that.
I think that's the best.
I think ETN's a good fit up there. And they love drafting Clemson running backs. They had a good experience with Spiller for a while, too.
Javonte Williams, too. I've been watching tape on that guy. I like him a lot.
I was going to say.
He wouldn't go that high, though.
I was going to recommend my boy out of Miami, Cameron Harris, but he was projected like a fourth or fifth rounder. Went back for another first senior year. I'm like, okay, yeah. Cool. The Buffalo's offensive line, also, we got to understand that a Jim Johnson-based defense like Andy, like Spagnuolo's, oh boy, the blitzing, it was making me so happy but so depressed. And this is because it's what I witnessed as a kid, as an Eagles fan. That's what I witnessed every day, Samir, was watching that defense blitz the snot out of you. Imagine Tyrann Mathieu, though, was Brian Dawkins. Yeah. And then you had Michael Lewis kind of patrolling the middle, or Sean Constantine, or whoever. They had a rotating belt of safeties my childhood at strong safety outside of Dawkins. Then they had, you know, Lito Shepard, Sheldon Brown, and Asante Samuel. And then they just had a bunch of guys in the middle just attacking the quarterback. And they just try to see. That's what I watched as a kid. So it was kind of nostalgic seeing an Andy Reid team with a Jim Johnson-based defense with Spagnuolo. It was kind of cool to watch. But, yeah, that was fun. Also, by the way, Shaq Barrett looked unblockable against Green Bay. That dropped third down conversion, the only way they stopped it was because they basically put him in a freaking chokehold. And I was just like,
JPP looked good too.
JPP looked like a monster. I was watching the game with a Giants fan, and this kid was losing his mind. I'm like, seven fingers and all, get the sack. Or was it six and a half or seven?
I don't know. Poor guy, is all I can say.
Yeah, he's being an idiot, whatever. All right, let's move on quick. Go rapid fire here. UFC 257, all by Kev. By the way, great point about the Buffalo overselling. I don't think they should. They should definitely stand pat in the offseason. But UFC 257, God bless my intern, because for the love of God, if I paid that money for that one, the stream was 50% of the stream was down, according to, like.
I don't know. I heard people were mad about it. I didn't really look into it. They're like, this sucks. We shouldn't be paying yada yada. And I was like, I don't know what to tell you guys.
I mean, the prelim, the co-made event, that was fun to watch. I like kind of
had it a good
on
one.
The corner of my eye while I was watching it, because I think it was on Xbox with Kev. I had it on the corner of my eye. I'm like, it was a fun fight to watch. It was a cool moment when the guy's wife came out hyping him up and stuff. That was kind of funny.
Yeah.
It was with Chandler, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Chandler's wife came out, she was talking shit, running her mouth, hyping him up, and I'm like, you know what, that's ride or die wife material. I respect that, but thank God I didn't pay money for that fight, because that was fast, man. That was almost as bad as Rousey versus, God, it was 2015. It was like a seven-second knockout.
Oh,
I have to go back to it. I have a meme about it or something like that. My buddy tagged me in. But yeah, no, That was so fast. And I saw it happening in slow motion, which is the best part about it, Samir. And I'll let you take the floor because you are our resident fight expert here on the show. But I saw McGregor, after he landed a couple of shots, I thought, but Poirier just didn't go down. And I think McGregor knew he was in trouble because he took a lot of leg shots. And I was just waiting for it. I'm like, oh, no. And I saw it, like, the second McGregor, they said, oh, McGregor's wins. And I'm like, uh-oh. And I'm just like, oh, it's over. And I just saw him go down. And I was just like, oh, no. I was in shock. It ended up, I'm like, what is going on? I don't even know what I texted you that night. But I think you're just like, let's go. I'm like, I had no dog in this fight, but like that was like entertaining.
I mean, that was a fantastic fight. I said on the podcast on, what was it, I think Friday or Saturday, that I was like, man, I don't think it's going to happen, but I'd love for a Dustin Poirier upset to happen. I mean, it did, and that was awesome, and I was pumped. And he, you know, those leg kicks, those I think were crucial. There was a video of him talking about it, because apparently his coaches found out that Connor doesn't usually block leg kicks particularly well, and especially in this fight he didn't, because I guess when you're trying to block leg kicks, you want to only hit right on the shin, and he wasn't getting his shin out there, and his calf was getting destroyed. I mean, you saw a video of him walking out with a crutch on after.
He said you bashed and, you broke my leg.
Yeah. And then once you know, like, Poirier was just hanging out around the outside, he wasn't really going for much, he was just tapping that leg. Then you start to see him get comfortable. His head movement was great. And then the second they switched positions, the second Poirier got back into the middle and pushed Connor out to the outside, I was like, oh, he's coming in. And that was when it happened. And man, that was a great knockout. Just a great knockout.
That was crazy. I heard Dean was just like, nope, we're stopping this now. Nobody's getting killed today. I will say, though, I'm happy he knocked him out by like actually like throwing some hands. Because the worst thing about UFC, is the one thing I hate the most as I'm wearing a UFC shirt right now, is that I hate watching guys who are grappling and they get you in a chokehold and you tap out. It's the most boring thing. Yeah. It's just two guys hugging for 20 minutes. It's like, it's great and all, but come on, man. Can we get some action, please? Like, can somebody hit somebody, something? Like, my favorite part was when he had McGregor locked up a little bit, and McGregor just shoulder drove him. I'm like, that was fun. I was just like, you don't even see how hard it is because it's such a subtle motion. And they show in slow-mo, you see Poirier's jaw go up, and I'm like, oh my god.
That's basically how he knocked out Cowboy. He used those mostly.
I remember that, actually. That was a crazy fight. I love it. Because I love Cerrone. Cerrone's Instagram used to be hysterical.
Yeah, honestly, I think they were just like, hey man, take this fight. You're probably not going to win, but we'll give you a good payday, and like then you can just go hang out and
drink Budweiser and wear a cowboy hat.
Yeah. Be bald.
Kev, you got anything to add about UFC 257?
I didn't watch it, although I did see during the Rodriguez versus Rivas fight, official came in when, I don't know who, I think it was Rodriguez had Rivas in a headlock, might have been the other way around. Official came in and like got down like he was calling the fight, so the one who was putting them in a headlock backed up. And he's like, all right, keep going. Fight's not over. And they were pissed.
Did the one who had the headlock end up winning, or was it like...
No idea, but that's still bad officiating.
Oh, totally.
Oh, it was the other person that ended up winning, I think.
Yeah, okay. Oh. So, yeah, that's bullshit.
Oh, boy. UFC to me is always, it seems like an imperfect sport because you have like the fact that it's individually owned by like, in like, you know, like there was like all the guys who like are big UFC fans all hate Dana White to me. All like my buddies who are all big UFC guys, because they all come off in the same way. They're like, oh, Dana, pay your fighters. I'm like, and to me, I think this whole fight was just odd. One, the superstar didn't win. Two, there was a problem with the streaming. Three, there's a ref issue in one of the prelims. Oh, weird weekend for UFC. So yeah, The streaming thing was hysterical because I saw Craft Brew Sports tweet it out, and I wanted to tweet out hashtag best intern got me a good working stream. Oh boy. All right. Moving on. Headlines quick before we run to weird stuff and last call. Matthew Stafford trade rumors have been announced. Trade talks have begun. You know, usual teams, Colts, Skins, or I'm sorry, football team. The usual suspects, guys who are without a quarterback with Philip Rivers retired. So, that's
basically. I'd like a Niners trade.
That'd be fun. I also heard Denver is another one too. That was one of the newer ones I've heard that got thrown in there. Yeah, all right. I mean,
Judy.
I was talking to a couple guys who were pretty connected in the whole Lions scenes they were talking about today, and they were like, "Yeah, the Denver one's realistic," and they're like, "It's because of his size and his arm. Elway will pay an arm and a leg for him." And he's a second-hand quarterback, so Elway will love him more. All right. Another quarterback issue. Deshaun Watson announced earlier last week that he wanted to go to the Jets. That was his number one destination. Might have been this weekend. I remember. I blacked out after seeing that. So, Kevin, I know you'll come at him with a haymaker, at least at first. Try to allow our listeners here to understand this. Why in the hell is Deshaun Watson want to go to the Jets?
I have no haymakers in this. I love the move. I think it makes perfect sense.
Really?
Look, Deshaun Watson likes doing humanitarian work. He likes helping people who are down and out. New York fits that pretty well. There are a lot of people who didn't make it in New York who then need help now. Large African-American population, which he likes helping as well, probably one of the bigger ones in the Northeast. It's a big city. A lot of recognition from the media. Also, the Jets aren't much worse run than the Texans recently. It's an even trade, more or less. However, I think with the addition that they, you know, have first-round picks, it makes sense. He will get better weapons there. And also, I feel like the Jets' first-time head coach, their GM is still pretty young. He can get what he wants. He can build the team around him. Nick Cesario is not going to do that in Houston. The Dolphins aren't going to do that in Miami. That's his second pick, but the Dolphins are already building something. He's not going to have as much of a say in it. He will have some as the star quarterback, and that was a pipe dream. There's no other place really that would love him as much, that would give him as much control as he wants.
Other thing I also thought about, they do have fast receivers. Speed can get you out of a lot of trouble at the receiving corps. You don't have to be an elite route runner, but if you've got a mobile quarterback and guys with some wheels, it can get you out of trouble. Denzel Mims and Breshad Perriman can fly. Chris Herndon's not a bad tight end. He's probably, I would say, a tier 3 tight end. Tier 4, Kevin. Yeah, tier 3, tier 4, Herndon.
I'd say decent. Lower tier 3 with the potential to be a higher tier 3, but that's nothing more.
He was elite in college, which cracks me up how his first catch in the NFL, he fumbled, which I thought was hysterical.
Then Crowder's solid.
Ex-Miami guy. Crowder's also a solid slot receiver. They need a running back as well, so if they can maybe – I can so see this happening where in free agency, they're like, all right, Deshaun Watson is traded to the Jets. And you've convinced me here because I was trying to find a way to make sense. I think my Jets disposition to begin with is what made me not like this move. But because I'm like, oh, Miami would be a good fit for Deshaun because Miami and they got weapons already. But
no, they don't.
They probably get Parker and sign Godwin on free agency. But
Parker's not that good. He dropped some easy catches this year, a lot of easy catches. The Texans have better weapons than the Dolphins.
That's true. Yeah, okay, so I can see that as well.
Anyone
so
the Texans, that isn't the way it is an idiot.
All right. So Texans get second pick then. Who they take?
Fields, probably.
Unless Urban Meyer shakes the world and takes Justin Fields first.
I mean, they're going to need a quarterback. Like, after you, I don't know. Do you think the Jets maybe will trade Darnold over there? That could work. Then, in which case, I would say then they would probably take Sewell.
Oh, Darnold would definitely have to be part of the deal, or at least, I don't know. Do they do multi-team deals in the NFL?
I don't know if they can or can't, but it's not a thing, really. They don't do it.
Yeah, it's not. It's more of an MLB and NBA thing. I don't know. Like, because the Darnold thing's weird to me, because if they get Watson, but the Texans, I feel like, would want to draft a quarterback and start over. So they wouldn't want Darnold as part of the deal.
I think, I would hope that the Houston Texans organization learned from the David Carr experiment. And if they pull this off, get the second overall pick, they take someone who's not a quarterback. Have some wily vet come in next year. Hire Josh McCown as a player coach. I don't know. But David Carr's career was ruined because they didn't get him any protection and he got sacked more than anyone else in the league. He was out of the league in a few years. I think they need to build up the team first and then get their quarterback of the future. If you build up the team, you can get a half-decent veteran quarterback on the market who will win you enough games to maybe make the playoffs and keep you competitive.
So my honest-to-God opinion is the Texans get the best thing with me is get at least Darnold. Darnold is at least mobile enough. The offensive line for the Texans is bad, but it's not unfixable. So second pick, you take Sewell out of Oregon. At least you got something there. Maybe do a little work in free agency, get like a Stefan Wisniewski from the Chiefs, or a guy who's like a traveling man, like a solid like C plus B minus lineman. Get a couple of those, and you have a serviceable O line, and Darnold does okay. You have a decent team to build around, but it's honestly, Kev, the more I'm thinking about this trade, it makes so much sense for both teams to send Darnold to Houston, get him a fresh start, get him out of New York, send Deshaun up to New York. He wants it. Let him do it. Excuse me. And at the end of the day, both teams win. So I'm for it.
That team was 7-9 before last year. I think they're still decent. They can be.
I mean, they were 7-5 with DeAndre Hopkins. Oh, wait, you're talking about the Jets, aren't you?
Yeah.
I'm an idiot. How can they 7-5 with Gase? That's, or 7-9? That's what I want to know.
Yeah.
Their defense was good.
All right. Fair. So feel good news, by the way, before we get into Kevin's little spiel. Justin Ross of the Clemson Tigers is coming back to Clemson. He's going to play. So a guy whose career was thought to be over is coming back, and he's going to play for Clemson Tigers. So it's kind of a nice feel good story. He was one of the top receivers in the country last couple of years. So it's a nice thing to see. All right. Kev, you got something about Bear Bryant for me. I want to hear this.
Oh, no, that's not weird stuff. I said we can talk about it.
Oh, no. I want to talk about it because, like...
Okay, yeah, Bear Bryant died in 1983 today. So, 28 years ago.
Wow.
A whole state shut down for his funeral.
Wow.
The legend of the man himself.
Love Bear Bryant. He retired from coaching in 1982 and then died in 1983. Man was born to be a football coach and nothing more.
Hey, listen, if you got a passion in life, you chase it to the day you go in the ground.
Yeah, he was the same age as Nick Saban is now.
Wow. That's terrifying to think about. Kev, well,
he also smoked and drank his entire life.
Also true. Nick Saban actually seems like he actually takes care of himself a little bit.
Yep.
All right, you got some word for me?
Yes, I do. We are talking about Congressman Andy Harris and Congressman Colin Allred.
Okay.
This was reported a couple weeks ago. Allegedly, they almost got into a fist fight on the House floor. Or was it House or Senate? I think it was the House floor. During the vote on Joe Biden's win. Allegedly, now it's come out that Colin Allred was not in the fight. He saw them getting heated and went in to break it up. Now, I love historical fist fights on the House floor. Those are always good. A man has died that way because he got beat with a cane or he shot someone who beat him with a cane. I don't know. I forget. It was 100-plus years ago. It was 200-plus years ago, actually. But we're going to talk about Colin Allred, as a.k.a. the number one man on the list of congressmen not to fuck with. Colin Allred is 6'1", 238. He went to Baylor to play linebacker and then played for 4 years for the Tennessee Titans. He is now a congressman in Texas, or for Texas. It was House of Representatives. He represents Texas' 32nd district. And if that man came near me as I was arguing with someone, I'd be like, yo, I'm in the wrong. I'm sorry. And leave. Like, I'm not dealing with this today. Not today, Satan. I'm going away.
Damn. This, yeah, I noticed there's a lot of athletes, ex-athletes, going to politics after they're done.
Yeah, it is kind of a trend.
Cory Booker. He played tight end at Stanford.
I was thinking built more like Bill Bradley back in the 80s and 90s.
Yeah, Cory Booker played tight end. I think Curt Schilling ran for something at one point.
Nobody on either side of the aisle would vote for Curt Schilling.
No.
No, the vote was he ran before all his crazy beliefs came out, but thank God he ran far enough away from the end of his playing career that no one really cared anymore. Like, if Tom Brady retired at the end of the year and then ran for Senate in Massachusetts, he would win, probably. Luckily, no one cared about Curt Schilling at that point, so we didn't have to deal with him talking about how Muslims are to blame for everything on the House floor.
Oh, Jesus. No more bloody sock conversations. All right. Ladies and gentlemen, it is time for last call. Let's kick that smooth jazz. I would play a little sadder music, but I don't know. It's today marks the 1-year anniversary of the death of one of my favorite athletes of all time, one of a lot of people's favorite athletes, and one of the greatest basketball players ever to walk the earth, Kobe Bryant, his daughter Gianna, and all the members of that helicopter crew and the people with them. I remember the day. It was crazy. One of my closest friends I'd never seen cry before was bawling his eyes out about it. Kobe was his childhood hero. It still feels odd. A year later, it was funny. I was talking to somebody at the gym today, and it said it was 1 year anniversary of Kobe, and I looked down. I'm like, I still have Mamba mentality written on my shoes with his number, because I wrote it that day. Because I felt I had no Kobe gear, and I felt like so bad because I idolized Kobe for his business adventures and public speaking, like all of it, like his speech tours and everything else, and like him being a motivational speaker. And idolized, but like I liked listening to him talk because he was a very very smart guy. So, and also he's an Eagles fan, so I had to show some love there as well. But it was kind of a raw feeling today seeing that again. I was like, oof, this is where 2020 went downhill real fast. It was like it started with this, and it was a roller coaster of terror. But yeah, it's been a year since Kobe's death, and, you know, you've seen a lot of tributes to him. One cool thing I saw this year was Vanessa Bryant telling Nike to shut the hell up and start releasing his shoes more frequently, which was nice. Shout out to Vanessa as one of the sneakerheads who wants a lot of Kobe's. It'd be nice to actually get a pair instead of a bunch of resellers getting them and jacking the price up by $400. But, you know, you can't say enough about how much Kobe did for the game of basketball. And, you know, the whole mom mentality thing, he was definitely an icon in his own right. And it still kind of feels raw after a year. But, Samir, you got anything to add about Kobe?
Yeah, sorry. I was just grabbing my computer charger here. You know, people forget how good he was. That's something that, honestly, I'll say, and I think a lot of people really do, and people kind of just discount him from the LeBron MJ talk, and, you know, I understand, but the guy was just such a competitor, and, like, he truly was, like, a man built in the model of Michael Jordan, and it was, but just, like, a kid who could, you know, you kind of saw, like, a darker side to Michael Jordan. Kobe was kind of a guy who could, he had that, but I think he was a little bit more family oriented, and like as he grew older you kind of grew to admire him, like the man, instead of like Michael Jordan, we kind of all admired the legend less than the man. Not that he's a bad guy, just like Kobe was such like a family man and like had such an admirable kind of like growth outside of the game. I just think, you know, he's a really inspirational guy, and that was and you really, like, the more you really think about it, like always seeing something on social media or like something, like you think about Kobe Bryant like almost every day, like, yeah. And it's pretty crazy. Yeah, Rest in peace. Yeah, Kobe Bryant.
And that, Kev?
I will say what I said when we record an episode. The day or the week he died, I'll say what I said the entire time he played his career. I have nothing nice to say about Kobe Bryant, the player. I hated him. I hate Kobe Bryant, the player. Dropped 81, don't care. 1-5, do not care. Kobe Bryant is the worst as a player. He played for the Lakers. I hate him. My favorite clip or memory of Kobe Bryant was him sitting courtside with Gigi after he retired. It's the most praise you're going to get from me about Kobe Bryant.
Like you also did make an amazing Kobe tribute video last year. I do remember that. I was very proud of you because I was just like, you could have easily just passed that off and you're like, nah, I got this. So.
Well, yeah, I mean, I hate him, but he's a legend of the game. I can't just not do my job.
Well, you earned a lot of respect from me that day. So, RIP to 24-8 and number two. And everyone else who's on the helicopter, it's been a year. It's been a crazy year. But no show at the end of the week, no podcast until this week, just a live stream. We'll be back Monday. It'll be Super Bowl week. It's going to be absolutely crazy. I don't even know how the hell we're going to fill that time. We will. We're going to end up ranting the entire time. We'll probably talk about everything under the sun. And then after that, it's going to get a little slower. You know, we're going to go back to the one show a week thing. Probably do Wednesday show, maybe. I don't know. Figure it out. But, it'll definitely be a fun time to kind of, we might even just still do the Tuesday show, who knows, but because it releases on Wednesday, but we'll definitely be around. I'll look out for, we're going to have a lot of cool content coming out, and Samir's got some cool stuff he's going to be doing. The intern's like working overtime with some of the cool concepts he's got. Off season's always fun, folks. Just wait, the draft special. I already got asked by a couple guys today, they want me to start doing draft research on quarterbacks. That's my job tonight. So we watched a film on Zach Wilson. I already watched some film on Lawrence today, and I gotta watch Fields, and I've gotta watch enough Mac Jones, but I'll watch a little more. And then I gotta watch some on Sam Ehlinger. So there you go. Folks, I wish you a happy, healthy week, and I hope you guys have a great weekend as well. We'll see you guys on Thursday anyway, so I don't know why I wish you a happy weekend. Pat will be back for Podcast and Chill, the live stream edition. And hopefully this time we don't have as much of a rant about Lynyrd Skynyrd's Allman Brothers between you two.
I mean, Samir just has to not run his mouth.
Yes. Samir, don't come at the man Skynyrd.
I'll break receipts.
Samir, there's like four things about Kevin you don't go after. Skynyrd, Bama, whiskey. Kev, fill me in. What's the fourth one?
Three things.
Three things, yeah. So Skynyrd, Bam, and whiskey. Basically, that's it for Kevin. You can make mom jokes.
I mean, Tom Brady, I guess. I'll defend Tom Brady.
We'll do 3.5. You can go out about the mom jokes. You can go out about the Patriots themselves, the Celtics, you know, his career, whatever. It doesn't matter. Skynyrd, Bama, whiskey. Leave it alone.
Right. I'm learning.
Learning quick. So there we go. All right, ladies and gents. That about wraps it up. I'm Jared. It's Kev, the intern Samir. We will catch you guys on the live stream Thursday. Enjoy the week.
Hey guys, Jared. Thanks for checking out the Corner Booth Pod. Be sure to check us out on Twitter and Instagram @CornerBoothPod. This podcast is brought to you by the Belly Up Podcast Network.